Welcome to the 24/7 Sports College Football Podcast with your hosts, Chip Patterson and Barton Simmons. The ultimate insider's guide from signing day to the national championship game and everything in between. CBS Sports presents the 24/7 Sports College Football Podcast.
Wrapping up this week here on the 24/7 Sports College Football Podcast, Chip Patterson, Barton Simmons. It is a ranking time. We have gone through most of college football, at least the Power 5 conferences. We've given all of our over-unders. We hit on a lot of the big topics in fall camp, including suspension season, how we're dealing with the media. If you have not caught up on every single 24/7 Sports College Football Podcast, then I suggest you do. It is the only way to prepare for the 2017 season. Make sure that you subscribe on iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, and you get them all right to your device. It's the best. Barton, how we feeling?
Feeling good, brother. One more show this week, and then I think, look, next week I think is when we really get a lot of news. We'll start filtering out of camp because they've had, most teams will have like a full week to dig in. So I'm excited to start hearing some of these names that start trickling out in the depth chart battles.
Yeah, I liked from if you haven't gotten a chance to go back and listen to our burning questions, a lot of the position battle questions. We also talked with Wes Rucker from Tennessee, leaning on that quarterback situation as well. But right now we're only going the best of the best. We're recording this here on Thursday morning. We are hours away from the release of the first Amway coaches poll. But we are also very, very close to the release of the most prestigious college football rankings in the country, the CBS Sports 130. That will be weekly rankings that we will be compiling. Barton and I are voters among the other CBS Sports. Before we get to comparing our ballots, which we both turned in yesterday, the other rankings are player rankings. And you may have seen these in the industry. The industry-leading player rankings are, of course, from the same people, 24/7 Sports, that you count on for the industry-leading rankings and ratings for players as they come into college. Barton, when you're going through and this rankings were put together, I know that the CBS Sports 130 comes together from our ballots. How much of the tiering system, the rating system, like I'm sitting here, I've got it pulled up, and man, we got two 101s, two A plus pluses on the list right now. How did the 2017, the top 247 list for current college players come together?
Yes, so Chance Litton does a great job. He's the one that sort of spearheads this and gets feedback from our national guys like me, and we sort of chop it up about these guys and sort it out a little bit. But the 101 I think is significant. Lamar Jackson, Derwin James, the two 101s. These ratings and grades are consistent with our ratings and grades in the high school rankings, the prospect rankings. And a 101 is what we call a franchise player. It doesn't happen every year in the high school ranks, just when those really special players come along. So that gives you an idea, you know, these are the guys that are beyond 100 in the rating scale. And we think Lamar Jackson and Derwin James are that special. I actually, if this was purely the Barton Simmons rankings, I probably would add Derwin James number one. I think I've said that on our show before. I think he is the most unique football player in the game and the best. Just like, he's not going to win the Heisman because he plays safety. And Lamar Jackson is absolutely unique. I watched his ESPNU flashback games recently, and he was as remarkable as I remembered. But Derwin James to me is like he's just an awesome football player to watch. Just does everything you could possibly do on defense. So very minor gripe there, but yeah, it's a, you know, we have 32 five stars just like we do in the high school rankings, on come national signing day. I think it's a pretty good list of five stars at the very least. I like all these guys. What jumped out at you when you started looking at this list, Chip?
I wanted to start with Derwin James and, I have a much larger body of work for Minkah Fitzpatrick. And because I've got a larger body of work, I probably have more games and more performances and more moments where it wasn't that I was let down, but there's just more, because there's more reps, because there's more experience, because we've watched Minkah Fitzpatrick under the microscope in back-to-back, like all the way to the college football playoff, national championship game type runs for Alabama. I think that I've had more to nitpick than I have. And I was just curious, I believe that Derwin James is definitely better, but I am not 100% sure that he's created a ton of distance. And by the way, Minkah Fitzpatrick, for those who haven't pulled it up, and you can find it on 247sports.com, Minkah Fitzpatrick is number 5 on this list. How much distance do you think there is between Derwin James and Minkah Fitzpatrick? Because as we get more experience watching Derwin James, there is some unique innate ability that Derwin James has, but as he gets more reps and as he's more under the microscope, do you think that we will have more to nitpick, or do you think that the assumptions that we have playing out from what we've seen? And again, here's what I love about Derwin James, and here I think that he separates himself from Minkah Fitzpatrick because he's able to be moved all around that defense and have a unique impact on the game from pretty much every position. He can rush the passer on third down. He can be a two-way player who checks his reads, and you can count on him to run in for run support or drop back and pass on a play-action situation. He's got incredible recognition of those things, phenomenal football player in every sense of the word, does a great job of making plays on the ball. I think Minkah Fitzpatrick might elevate himself with some of the return abilities and just being a game breaker and a playmaker. When you're looking at these two players against each other, we're going to be talking about filling out our All-American list. I kind of feel like the defensive backfield is really easy because you just start with these two.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I mean, we have, if you look at the ratings, the top 5 is 100 plus, and Minkah is a 100 rating, and Derwin James a 101 rating. So it's a exercise of splitting hairs, I think, between those two. I agree. I mean, Minkah Fitzpatrick is a really a fun guy to watch. In my opinion, in a lot of ways, he's a bigger version of Tyrann Mathieu in the way he's his ball skills, his ability to turn defense into offense after he gets a turnover. And his versatility. I mean, he's probably, I don't know, I guess he's probably a corner in the NFL, but he's played nickel, he's played corner, he's played safety now. And I mean, that versatility is pretty phenomenal. Derwin James, similar versatility. He probably could play corner, frankly, if he wanted to, but he's too physical to keep out there on the edge of the defense. You need him in the middle of the field where he can go make plays. So I think because remember, he's hurt last year. He was a freshman where he flashed. But I think this year, because we're going to see a full body of work from Derwin James, that it's going to be, I think he's going to just, it's be, it'll be eye opening. I think it'll be, he'll be one of the absolute premier college football names. And I know that sort of goes without saying, but I think, when you think about it, when people from the West Coast are familiar with a defensive back in the SEC, that's more of a rarity. I think he's one of those guys that everyone, despite playing the position of safety, which is kind of an understated position at times, he's going to be a national name. I'm curious at where you felt the quarterback rankings are unique. And in that there's a lot of names. Lamar Jackson, Baker Mayfield, Sam Darnold, in that order, followed by Mason Rudolph. Is that kind of where you would slot the quarterbacks as well, given what we know heading into this season?
No. I'm fading Baker Mayfield.
Tell me why, because it seems, in some ways he feels like he's been overlooked, and I'm curious what your hesitation is.
I think that there is there's reasons to be confident because the relationship with Lincoln Riley is established and now only strengthened to the point where I have no I have no worries about him, you know, being lost out there, even though he's losing a lot of skill position talent. But while Oklahoma has been able to replace that skill position talent really, really well over the last couple of years, I just think that there's a step back, and especially when we're talking about splitting hairs at the top of college football, I'm way more excited about his bedlam rival, Mason Rudolph. I think Mason Rudolph is just going to have an absolutely huge season. And if we're talking about impact on college football just this year, like, Baker Mayfield has been so much fun to watch, and he certainly is able to create a lot more with his, he can extend the play, he can get outside the pocket, he's been able to make some crazy passes, but man, I really, really like Mason Rudolph over Baker Mayfield. I think that Sam Darnold, a player who we talked about with Dennis Dodd in the last show, he is right up there with Mason Rudolph near the top. I'm kind of fading Baker Mayfield from the idea that when Oklahoma stepped to the line of scrimmage, there was so much that you had to worry about. I mean, between, Samaje Perine's a beast, just an absolute hoss. And sometimes you would have Joe Mixon back there, and you had Dede Westbrook, who was just a phenomenal player. And then the year before that, you had Sterling Shepard, who was ridiculous. I mean, and Mark Andrews is still there. But there's just been so much that a defense has had to worry about that Baker Mayfield's escapability was like third or fourth on the list. And, you know, I'm ready to be proven wrong on this, but I just think that Oklahoma's offense, even with Baker Mayfield, they'll have the ability to put up numbers, but he just doesn't scare me as a game-breaking, impact the game kind of player like a Sam Darnold or like a Mason Rudolph right now.
Well, a counter to that, though, is Oklahoma, if you include Jeff Badette, who's coming from Kentucky, they're returning nine guys who started last year on offense, and that includes their whole offensive line. Obviously, the big piece that they're missing is the running back, and I don't think that they can just seamlessly fill that hole with the guys they got on the roster. Samaje Perine and Joe Mixon were absolute dudes, but as elusive as Baker Mayfield is, as good as Lincoln Riley is at getting his playmakers the football, I think he's going to be a pretty dangerous guy. But to your point, though, we'll find out. I mean, if he has another year like he's had, I think he should absolutely be in New York at the Heisman Trophy ceremony, because this is the year now where he is the guy.
He's the guy.
It's his team.
Like, this has got to be, he's going to have to do some put him on his back type stuff. And like, he's gritty and he's tough, but man, like, how many shots are you going to be able to take? Right. I mean, this has been, and I don't mean this from like a health standpoint, but just in general, like when you're putting it all on your back as the I'm going to be the water bug type player, I don't know. I think that there's not enough right now that threatens me about Oklahoma's offense where I can't leave a player as a spy.
Yeah. No, I think we'll find out. I think that there's a good enough running backs to where like those guys don't have to be superhuman. And I think, you know, like you mentioned, Mark Andrews is going to be a threat. I think Jeff Badette's a big addition. Marquise Brown's a JUCO transfer that can be that Dede Westbrook type. But I'll tell you another team that I think is interesting when you look at this top 32 and you just sort of look up and Georgia's got three of the top
32. Yeah.
They're so talented, and they're so unproven, and Kirby Smart's so unproven as a head coach. But, man, I like that we have Nick Chubb as high as we do. Trent Thompson has had a few recent off-the-field issues, but he is that talented to be a top 32 type of guy. And then Roquan Smith is the other one out there we got at 33. That, I think, is a little insight to how good they could be. The key is, though, in the whole 247, there's no offensive lineman from Georgia on the list. So that offensive line has got to do something to give Jacob Eason a chance. Because if they do, man, they got a chance. Like, this is a team with legit, legit talent.
What do you think about the fact that Notre Dame, which has both, I think, isn't Quentin Nelson and Mike McGlinchey? I know Mike McGlinchey's high, but I think Quentin Nelson's on the list. And Equanimeous St. Brown, old EQ, tuning up the EQ. He's got to be on there. Yeah. And he's further down around 111. What's, like, this offensive line has NFL talent. What is the takeaway for you when we're looking at Notre Dame, a team that has put players in the NFL, but not always been able to have that talent translate into the best seasons? I mean, certainly they had the New Year's Six Bowl from 2 years ago, but there's a lot of concern coming off that 4-8 season. Is it weird that Notre Dame gives me like Miami under Al Golden vibes? Because the individuals are there that always get me excited, but I'm not totally enthused by the team as a whole.
Well, and you could argue Quentin Nelson's even better than Mike McGlinchey, and we got him 60th, and McGlinchey in the 30s or 20s. But they are going to be awesome on the offensive line, and they've got good running backs. They've got good receivers led by Equanimeous St. Brown. It's all about, is Brandon Wimbush as good as he's supposed to be? I mean, this is the guy that supposedly ran out of town Malik Zaire and was rumored to be the more talented version of Deshaun Kizer.
Wimbush ain't on this list.
He is not on there. And part of me thinks that he's absolutely a candidate to be on there by the end of the year. Like, I would expect, in fact, if he's not on it by the end of the year, then Notre Dame probably had a pretty disappointing season again. What I'm confident in with Notre Dame, and we'll get into the team a little more as we talk about our top 25s, but I am confident their defense will be improved. I think Mike Elko is the real deal. But I actually think talent-wise, personnel-wise, offensively, this is a team that's like good enough to beat anybody in the country. We just got to figure out what they've got defensively, because there is no defensive player sniffing this list for Notre Dame. They've got, I don't know who you would even put as a candidate to be on this list from Notre Dame's defensive side of the ball. So it's going to have to be on the offense, but the defense I think will absolutely be improved.
All right, I'm going to give you five defensive tackles. You have to pick two. Rashawn Gary and Maurice Hurst from Michigan.
Okay.
Vita Vey.
Let me stop you already. Okay. Is Rashawn Gary going to be labeled as a defensive tackle?
Oh, because he's playing edge. You already told us that.
He's really like, he's more, I mean, he can play defensive tackle, but I think I can cop out of this one and call him an edge guy and make it a little easier on myself.
All right, are Christian Wilkins and Dexter Lawrence the top two? And Ed Oliver. So, like, you've got to pick two even out of those three, and you can throw Vita Vey in there as well.
I would also, Chip, I'd throw Daron Payne in there.
Oh, gosh, yes. Like, Daron Payne and, like, Derek Nnadi, right?
Yeah. Nnadi's right there. To me, Nnadi is, like, that one slight step below. But I think Daron Payne is, to me, absolutely in that mix. He was just overshadowed last year. Now that Daron Payne's about to step into the spotlight, that dude is a freak. But to answer you, I mean, so I think that my guys would be, man, this is tough. I think do you have your answer?
I mean, I'm trying to not be an ACC homer and just go Lawrence Wilkins. But I mean, Ed Oliver's like one of the best. Ed Oliver deserves a spot with Derwin James as one of the best just college football players, period.
Yeah. I think I would go, if I had to just make a team, I think I would go, I think I might go Lawrence Wilkins. And that's crazy. Because even Ed Oliver, the thing about Ed Oliver is all I think about with Ed Oliver is athleticism. And I know he's got more to him, but I can't envision him. I don't envision him just bulldogging some offensive guard and stoning him and like powering him back into the quarterback or back into the running back. He's probably done that, and I'm just not thinking of it. But he's just so athletic that that's
– I see him spinning. He's a spinning swimmer.
And a slicing guy. Like, yeah. He's just a penetrating defensive tackle. There's nothing wrong with that. But I just – I think, to me, Christian Wilkins and Dexter Lawrence have – but I'm really close, honestly, to putting Daron Payne in that group over maybe – Dexter Lawrence, I guess. But it's as good of a defensive line year as I think we've seen in a while. I think these guys, it's so exciting, so fun to think about these guys on the defensive front. The other one that I think is interesting is, like, we had a little bit of a discussion about who's the best edge guy in this class. I think at one point Arden Key was number one in our rankings. I actually pushed for Harold Landry to be the number one defensive end. I think that's how we ended up going with. But between Landry, Bradley Chubb, Arden Key, and Rashawn Gary, there's a pretty Ogbo Okoronkwo, there's a pretty good defensive end presence on this list too. And it's remarkable. But I think that the dude from Boston College may be the best of that group.
You know what's the most incredible thing about Landry is that the rest of that defensive line, like, you know that Adazio is always going to have some dudes out there, and I know that Don Brown's not the head coach anymore, but they've had a really solid, well-coached defense for a while. But Landry gets double-teamed and still gets his numbers. Like, he still gets his tackles for loss and his sack numbers, and he doesn't have, like, Bradley Chubb has, like, Kentavious Street on the other side and an NC State defensive line that's pretty solid up and down as well as being deep. I think that Arden Key is, when I think of Arden Key, I think of the same thing you said with Ed Oliver, where it's like an athleticism thing.
Right.
I think Bradley Chubb's an absolute stud. And Landry gets his numbers. I might go Chubb over Landry, though. And by the way, Landry at 11 on the list, Chubb at 14, Arden Key down at 19. I tend to lean Chubb here. I think that I think Tyquan Lewis is another one to watch. I think he's going to have a big season.
But that's, like, Chubb's another one where, he's got a ton of help on that defensive front. They go, like, 7 or 8 deep. And here's what's so remarkable. Like, I'm blown away by what BC's done defensively over the last 3 or 4 years, because their offense has been horrible. And that defense is on the field all the time, and they always have to run right back out there after a 3-and-out. I played on a defense my last year in college where our offense wasn't very good and our defense was pretty solid. And I'm telling you, there's nothing more demoralizing than just having a great stop, getting on the field, and then like 2 real-time minutes later, you're being, like, punt teams being called up again to get in the box and get ready to go back on the field. Like, when that happens over and over and over again, that can be demoralizing. And that defense has had to do that for, like, 4 straight years and still gets theirs. And that's what I think is just – I love that BC defense because of how – I mean, I think they'll be better this year offensively at BC. So maybe they won't have to, they'll get a little more rest on the sideline. But that group, I think, is so mentally tough, and Harold Landry is just the dude. I don't think, like, there's no other Boston College guys on this list, but I bet you Harold Landry is still going to have a monster season.
He and Chubb could have been first-round picks last year. So, like,
yeah.
I mean, that's, like, above anything else, there's going to be a couple of plays and a couple of games where their experience is just going to elevate them. It's going to be huge. Like, when we were debating, we just talked about edge rushers and defensive line. Do you think that you're in favor of, for All-America teams, creating the edge rush? Because my point in our debate of whether to do DTs and defensive ends is that the defensive tackle position, and we just, threw out some of the best in the country, as in, like, some of the best players in the country being interior defensive linemen. Like, I felt like this year in particular, you're not going to see the interior defensive linemen get overlooked in an All-American debate, but we should introduce the edge rusher.
Well, I think it's there just gets to be some – like Tim Williams last year for Alabama shouldn't be listed as a linebacker to me. He's not – in the traditional sense of the word linebacker, that's not what he's doing. He's a pass rusher. And he – and so the teams that have these guys as pass rushers, I mean, I think we have to treat them as edge defenders and then defensive interior guys. So I think that's the way it should be treated. I mean, you see the NFL now kind of moving to that in terms of the way they prep for the NFL draft and that kind of thing.
Oh, that's their positions on, like, when they get drafted, it'll be edge as their listed position.
Right. So I think college football, like, I don't know why that's not more of the standard in college football too. But yes, like Agbo Okoronkwo is to me not a linebacker. He is an edge defender. And I think that's the way they should be treated. I'm curious, you know, as I look at this list, there's a couple, like the guys that I think could move up during the, like with a good season. One guy that really jumps out at me is Rashawn Evans at Alabama. I think he is the next guy who is sort of, I mean, that sort of next man up in the Alabama defense. We've seen flashes of him. We've seen that he's, you know, he can make a big play, but he's still, you know, he's getting his third down reps or whatever. Now that he is a standard foundation piece in that defense, he is going to be, I think, a huge, huge impact guy this year, and I think he's going to blow some people away. I think Jarrett Stidham could move up as well with a big season. And I'll tell you, another kind of group that I really like, we may have talked about this when we broke down the Pac-12, but we've got two Stanford corners in the top 102, Elijah Holder and Quentin Meeks. And when you throw Justin Reed in there too at safety, I love Stanford's defensive backfield. And I think they have as good of a pair of corners as you're going to find in the country between Quentin Meeks and Elijah Holder. But Stanford's defense struggled when Elijah Holder went out last year with an injury. And now he's going to be healthy again. That I think that whole defense is going to be really good.
And that's huge in the Pac-12. That is so important. In the Pac-12, when you're going to be going up against Jake Browning, Luke Falk, that's all right. I want to get back to Rashawn Evans. So that's another example of like, because he's from Alabama, because he was one of the top 15 players in the country, because he was like a damn near perfectly rated 5-star. Like, how do you remain patient when you see this guy only getting his third down reps? Like, is that just where we're at with Alabama?
It's we've learned that can still work at Alabama. We always have to check ourselves to make sure we don't call these guys a bust before they get their actual opportunity at Alabama, because it's the truth, man. They do have 5-stars sitting on the bench, and so often, I mean, there's probably guys at Alabama that have gone through their career and finished their career and been sort of labeled as overrated. But in the reality, like, they just had guys that were higher rated than them play their whole career above them. So it's just this weird place in Alabama where, and for us, I mean, we just wait and see what they're good. I mean, for a guy like Rashawn Evans, knowing how good he is, man, that's gotta be, how hard is it to sit and wait your turn?
Right.
But they managed to keep these guys happy and keep them on the roster, and maybe that's why they're so consistently have their breakout years when they get their opportunity, because they've just been chomping at the bit for so long. But, yeah, man, like, Rashawn Evans is going to be a flash football player every time you turn on the football game for Alabama. He's going to be one of the most fun defenders to watch.
All right, so with that, Let's go ahead. We had to turn in our CBS Sports 130 ballots, and Barton and I, we were told to do a minimum of 25, an entire list of 130, some crazy people, including our own Jerry Palm, who might be a human computer. What you see on television come Selection Sunday is just a cyborg, but Jerry Palm does all 130, and a few others do all 130. Barton and I are a little bit more sane, We're just going to do 50 every single week. And so when you turned in your first ballot, was Alabama number one?
Alabama sitting number one.
Yeah.
Is that you got them too?
Yeah. I'm Alabama, yeah. Ohio State, Florida State for my top three in that order.
Okay. I have USC above Florida State.
Ooh.
So there's my slight difference. Where is USC on your list?
Four.
Yeah, okay. So that's sort of the standard top four. I think Alabama is I think of those four, to me, USC may be the most vulnerable because their schedule is a little bit tough. They don't have a bye week. I think the Pac-12 is a little bit more tricky is from a week-to-week standpoint than the other conferences that those teams around them are playing. So I think USC could be the one most vulnerable of, you know, if those are like the college football playoffs four, I would be least confident picking USC. But yeah, I mean, we'll find, I mean, some people have Florida State number two. I mean, in some ways this could be a 1-2 matchup at Alabama, Florida State to open the season. So I just don't know how you pick against Alabama. I don't know where you find losses for them because they're so deep. They're so good on offense, and their defense is always responds. The only weakness I can think of is like there is some coaching turnover. So is any of that? I mean, but as long as Nick Saban's there, I don't know how you doubt.
But like,
him.
And where is the margin for error right now? Where is the margin for error in the SEC? Because there have been times where you look out there and you see Ole Miss at the peak of its powers and you know, Dak Prescott leading Mississippi State. But man, I just, you know, there are a lot of leaps of faith for Auburn, a team that I actually have at number 11, and it felt high for me at number 11. Like the 11 number looked higher. I just didn't have many other options there, but I just think that there is still enough separation between Alabama and the rest of the SEC. It's like Alabama's all dressed up and the rest of the SEC is like running out the door to work, like still putting their belt on.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And especially in the West, I think, I mean, Arkansas is down. And to me, Texas A&M is down and Mississippi looks like they're going to be down again. So all of a sudden, the big powerhouse West, I don't think, look, we've yet to have confidence in Ed Orgeron. We've yet to have reason to have confidence in him. Auburn, like you mentioned, I mean, they're for me, they're ninth. But even that, again, I'm still having flashbacks of the Jeremy Johnson year where everyone was thinking they were a national title contender. It's still Alabama and everybody else. I've got conference wise. I have the Big Ten with three top 10 teams. So I have Ohio State, Penn State, and Wisconsin.
Yeah, I'm Wisconsin at 10. I'm Penn State at 6.
Yeah. Yeah, I have Penn State at 5. That's going to be their offense, I think, is so good. And their defense. Here's the thing that I like about Penn State's defense. When I visited them, I sat down with Brent Pry. And I think he admittedly was figuring things out last year defensively. Like this, he was taking over Bob Shoup as a play caller. He tried to do a lot of things early in the season, had this long play call sheet, and they had a lot of injuries, and that forced them to simplify things defensively. And I think that's when it clicked for him that he just needed to take out all the variables and simplify the defense for these guys and just let them run around. And I think when they did that, the defense, the second half of the season was great. And so I think they're going to be a defense that knows their identity from day one this year. And I think they're going to be good enough. I think Penn State is a real national title contender. Now I'm not picking them to win it. I don't know yet whether I'm ready to say they're be in the playoffs, but if they're in a national title game, I'm not going to be surprised. So I think Penn State is the real deal this year. And I don't feel that bad having them at five. I thought I'd be scared throwing them that high, but I'm really not.
Okay. Dude, don't worry about it. I'm talking out both sides of my mouth. Earlier this show, talking trash on Baker Mayfield, and then I'm out here with Oklahoma at five. Like, I got
really, yeah, that's interesting.
I got Oklahoma at 5 and Oklahoma State at 8 because I think that, like, and again, that kind of goes back to me thinking that after Wisconsin, I've got Auburn at 11, and like after Wisconsin, I start to lose confidence. I think Oklahoma and Oklahoma State are both, you know, compared to, and again, rankings are just you compared to the other teams out there. I favor both of them above like your Florida, your Georgia. Ooh, I'm down on Michigan. I'm probably too far down on Michigan. I got LSU. All right, so outside the top 10, I got Clemson at 9, Washington at 8. Outside of the top 10, I'm going Auburn at 11, LSU at 12, Stanford 13, Florida 14, Georgia 15.
Yeah, that's I was curious where you had the Georgia, LSU, Florida group. So
I'm LSU, Florida, Georgia in that order, but it's all between 10 and 15.
So I'm lower than you. I'm Georgia, LSU, Florida, but I'm at 17, 18, 19.
Ooh.
So I don't really believe in those schools yet. I'll give you, so here's sort of one of my, this is my wild, my, I don't know, wild card, my off the radar pick here. I've got above those three, I've got Mississippi State at 15.
Sick. Oh, yes. Give it to me, Nikki Fitz. Yes.
I've been yelling about him. I got to put my money where my mouth is. I think, to me, I just really think that they've got a chance to be a good team. A lot of it depends on how good their JUCOs coming in are and how much they can impact right away. But I have more faith in Mississippi State than I do Coach O at LSU. I have more faith in Dan Mullen at Mississippi State than I do Coach O at LSU. I think Georgia and Florida both just have so much to prove. I don't know. I don't know how far. Like, where do you have Mississippi State?
38.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's probably more normal. Like, I think that's probably where most people have them. So, I mean, they're going to be way wrong, or I'm going to be look really smart. But I think Mississippi State's going to be pretty good. Do you have a sort of off mainstream play anywhere on your top 25?
I thought that Stanford at 13 was going to end up being high, but you know, when I started to fill out the rest of it, like, you know, it didn't take long for me to put Northwestern at 17. You know, it didn't take long for me to,
I like that.
Yeah, it didn't take long for me to start, you know, slipping NC State into the top 20 at 19. I got Washington State at 22.
I'm exactly 22 for Washington State.
Yeah,
also.
Like I was. I just don't. All right. So here's a nice little run. So outside the top 25, I've got Texas and Texas A&M. I got them at 28 and 29. I have no idea what to make of those teams.
Yeah, Texas could be a top 10 team. Texas, there's a huge variable with Texas. They could be 10 and 2, or they could be 7 and 5. They are a fascinating football team, and they play a lot of tough games. I'm with you. I have Texas at 30, but if Texas finishes 8th, like I won't be blown away. Like, I think that I am definitively not very high on A&M though. Mm. I've got them down at 43, and
wow.
I'm not super concerned about it.
All right, so Christian Kirk was listed at 50 on the top 24/7, and that's a player who I think could have, if the ratings are done again at the end of the season, that's a player who, with a very productive, like, and because of the talent that's there, we know that productivity is possible if the other pieces on that team fall into place. Like, Christian Kirk, to me, is a top 15 type talent, but number 50, I can't argue with where we're at right now. And like, Christian Kirk's not going to make or break Texas A&M's team success, but he is indicative of what I feel about a lot of Texas A&M, which is top 15, top 10 potential, and like top 50 production.
Well, Christian Kirk is at the mercy of his quarterback to a certain degree too. And I think Nick Starkel is a good football player, but I do not think he is. I think he is one of the worst quarterbacks in the SEC. And I don't mean that to be a knock on him as much as I mean that to be a, that's where the pecking order is. That's where he is in the grand scheme of things in that conference. And so, that game one, who are you going to pick in UCLA, Texas A&M? Is that UCLA, right?
Texas A&M.
So that's a Josh Rosen versus Nick Starkle matchup, and you're going to pick Starkle.
Yes.
Okay. I don't know that. I have UCLA at 42 and A&M at 43.
Etheridge Massington Esquire does not inspire much confidence. I think Dalen Mack's going to eat Josh Rosen in the second quarter. It's going to be over. Travion Williams has a good game. Like all we need to do is throw bubble screens to Christian Kirk and hand the ball off to Williams. And Texas A&M can get out of that with an ugly 28 or 31-23 victory.
Man, if UCLA doesn't win that game, then that's going to be a long year for Jim Mora. I don't have
UCLA in my top 50.
Well, I mean, they're 42 for me. There's a 40 through 50. That first loss is going to send all those teams heading down the other wrong way of the river. So. I'm with you. I don't think that they're a great team by any stretch, but I think that that's going to tell us a lot about those two teams. I don't know. I'm with you on Northwestern. I have them 20th. So you actually have them even higher, which I like. I could see them finishing.
You sold me on Clayton Thorson. I spent all these years trashing Clayton Thorson, and I'm not going to follow you all the way up the mountain to where he is potential first round talent. Well, you said first-round talent. Can't argue with talent. But I don't think he's a potential first-round pick. But when you sold me on Clayton Thorson as not being a hindrance to this team's success, I like what they have elsewhere. I like Northwestern as a top 20 team for sure.
Agree. I think they're going to be good. They're going to be they're going to be one of those teams that's 6-0 or something, and all of a sudden is top 12 in the country, and everyone's like, where'd they come from? And we'll see if they can hang on to it. And then I had Stanford 11th, so I had them a little higher than you. I really think that they've got college football playoff potential to me if Keller Chris can just do something. And then I ended up with Michigan lower than I thought I would. I
me
had them
too.
13th. Where did you end up with Michigan?
16.
Yeah, I had them 13th. And in some ways, I thought I would have them top 8 or 9, but I ended up sort of easing them back. Miami is 14th for me. Is that high for you? Where do you have Miami?
18.
Yeah, I think Miami, when you look at their schedule, the way it sets up, there's just a couple games in there that they got to win.
Right.
And if they take care of business in those big games, they've got a pretty clean shot to a 10-2 season. So that team is fascinating to me. I snuck Notre Dame in at 24th. I snuck Utah in right above them at 23. And then Kansas State's in there at 21 too. But right outside my top 25, another group, you mentioned that Texas-Tennessee section. I've got Tennessee at 27, Vatek at 26, and South Carolina at 28. Those are three teams that I'm very intrigued by.
That's high for South Carolina, right?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
It is. I'm a believer in South Carolina. I think if their offensive line is better And I don't know. I guess I'm trying to figure out too what I'm missing, because I think that they've got a better offensive line than people give them credit for. They've got two really good receivers in Bryan Edwards and Deebo Samuel. They've got a good quarterback in Jake Bentley, young running backs who are improving. Rico Dowdle is the leader there, and then they've got a defense that is I have to trust Will Muschamp on. I just think they'll be pretty good defensively. So what am I missing here? I think that they're we talked about them in our over under picks when they're like their total is like 5 or 5.5, which blew me away. This is a team that I don't think there's anybody in the SEC East that they can't beat.
Well, you know what I think is missing there, and this is outside of Sky Moore, who is proven, and I would say from another generation. Like, I guess, like, he to me, South Carolina's defense fell back in the late Spurrier, in the last couple Spurrier years. And while Will Muschamp is a very good coach, I think that that is where I point the finger at where South Carolina has fallen off from, you know, being near the top of the SEC East. And Sky Moore was kind of, to me, near the end of the peak years. And Will Muschamp, very, very good defensive coach, but like, you know, this isn't Auburn, this isn't Florida, this isn't Texas. Like, this, it's going to take, a few more cycles. And maybe it's this year that a big step forward is coming, but I think the overall talent of the personnel on the defensive side of the ball is just a little bit further down the line than what we're used to seeing Will Muschamp and his staff work with.
Yeah, defensive front is probably an area of concern there. They've got experience in the secondary, but I don't know that I necessarily am a huge believer in Jamarcus King or Chris Lamons. But they love this freshman, Jalen Dickerson. I think Bryson Allen Williams is really good. I think Sky Moore is really good. And then I think they got to have some guys up front. So we'll see. But they're an interesting team to me, and I'm not super worried about where I have them as far as 28. I think that could end up being high, but I could see them being a top 25 team by the end of the season. So I think that's an interesting team to watch. Who do you have any group of five teams in your top 50?
You're reading my mind through the line. I was going to say, where do your group of five teams fall? Yes, I've got my top group of five team is South Florida at 21. Charlie Strong, Quentin Flowers. I got Boise State at 25.
Whoa, that's high for Boise State, is it not?
It's very high for Boise State.
Where's your Boise State love coming from? I gotta dig into Boise State. Are they gonna be good?
I think so. I've got them in a little bit of a resurgence season. I think that last year had some bad losses, some real bad losses. We still got Brett Rypien over there. Still got Brian Harsin. Most of the coaching staff's intact. I think the Mountain West is like Mountain West has some very good football. Mountain West also to me is like one of the most fluid conferences in terms of how quickly teams can rise up and fall down. Like Boise State, 25 is probably a little high because, you know, I think that Boise State would lose to, I guess, some of these teams that I've ranked below them. But I don't know, got good vibes right now for Boise State. I think that they're going to end up winning the Mountain West this year.
Yeah, I think Colorado State's got a chance to be pretty good. Wyoming, they got to handle Josh Allen. San Diego State, New Mexico's tough. I mean, I kind of like that conference. I can see it. I had Boise State, I think, out. I mean, I had them in like the 60s or something when I was sort of extending my list out. But I may be off there. Like, I don't. That's a team that it always seems like, that a win away from 11-1 or whatever. I mean, they're always right there at the cusp. So I could see it for sure. So you got those, or those your two, or you have more?
I mean, they were a 10-win team last year.
Yeah, exactly. You do look up and they won 10 games.
Yeah, they won 12 games in 2014, 9 in 2015, 10 last year.
Yeah,
like not much turnover on the coaching staff. I got BYU at 31.
Yep, 32 for me there.
Army at 37.
Whoa! I like it.
Yeah, I think.
I mean,
Army's...
I don't know if I like it, but I like the pick. I like you going there. You're a believer in the cadets, huh?
Mm-hmm. I think that even though they're losing, what's his name? The running back turned quarterback who was awesome and helped them win the Navy game last year. Yeah. Their turnover at quarterback, but I just think that the overall work that staff has done to turn Army around from just being an also ran like borderline FBS team. I remember I looked up when the win totals were first released and it was at like 7. And I was like, we really have reached a point where Las Vegas believes that Army's going to be out here and win 7 or 8 games. Like, a new page has turned for Army football. So I felt like I had to at least reflect my positivity there. and throw them somewhere between 35 and 50. I know that 37 might be a little high, but you know, we'll let their season play out and see where they get moving. I'm a little bit too. I know this isn't. I got Wyoming at 42, App State at 43, Memphis at 49.
Yeah, yeah. You went a little heavier on the Power Five or the Group of Fives than I did. I like that, but I couldn't pull the trigger on enough guys. I went USF at 25, BYU at 32. I know they're not Group of Five, but they're they can count here. And then I went.
They don't cash Power Five checks. They ain't Power Five.
All right. So then I went Memphis at 44, and that's it. I had Houston at 48.
The Riley Ferguson experience. Oh yeah. What do we think about Houston?
I think they could still be pretty good. I mean, Kyle Allen's their quarterback.
Yeah.
So I mean, he is. Their offense will look different without Greg Ward, and they'll be more of a pass heavy offense. But that defense, I mean, they still got Ed Oliver. We'll see what Major Applewhite's made of.
Yeah.
But I still think that they've got the pieces to be pretty good, and I think in some ways they. Now that they don't have the Tom Herman inevitable departure looming over their head, I think they may be able to play a little bit looser this year and you know, maybe avoid some of those upsets that stung them last year. But I think they're pretty good. And I think Memphis,
Riley Ferguson,
is going to be. Yeah, I mean, they got Riley Ferguson. They return a bunch of guys. Anthony Miller, who was in our top 247 for the college football side, is one of the best receivers in the country. Mike Norvell has a chance to be one of the premier names in this coaching cycle this year if they can put together a pretty good run here. I mean, they got UCLA at home. That's a huge opportunity for them. And the AAC is always tough. So, I mean, every week there's a game that they got to worry about. But I think that pass offense led by Anthony Miller and Riley Ferguson is going to be really good.
All right, you've got the award-winning closing segment question of the day question. Barton, what do you have today?
Okay, we've been a little heavy on Ole Miss, but I think this is an interesting question given all we know now, all we're learning. If you, right now, today, you're an Ole Miss fan, you could go back and reverse course and never have hired Hugh Freeze, or you can accept having hired him, take all the success you had, the recruiting fund, the New Year's Six bowl games, the Bama wins, take all of it, but also take what's about to come. Do you go back and reverse course, or do you hang on to Hugh Freeze and enjoy the fun you had?
I take it. And here's why. Because the selling to your fans and selling to your boosters that it can happen, like giving them that taste of being one of the top teams in the country, the Alabama wins. I mean, dude, the Alabama wins alone, like the nectar, the sweet, the nerve receptors firing the dopamine in your brain, like the happiness, the joy, the elation, like Ole Miss football. This was a historic little peak of success, short-lived, and now mired with scandal forever, no doubt. But like in terms of what you got, and then also that the fact that you tasted it means you're going to fiend to get back there. And I think that over time, the fact that it happened will end up being something that Ole Miss fans will be able to, they'll be able to look back on those Alabama wins and those two seasons in particular. And that can motivate them to hope and dream for a brighter future for Ole Miss football.
Yeah. I'm torn on this. Because not only did they have all the fun on the field, but if you're a diehard fan and you follow recruiting, it's fun to be able to battle with the blue bloods in college football and win. And that's what Ole Miss was doing on the recruiting trail. And that's fun. And that was an experience, I think, for Ole Miss. And, I mean, when you're sort of the little brother and you have a growth spurt and all of a sudden you're beating up on your big brother, man, that's a great feeling. But I am very concerned that Ole Miss is about to go into like a dark age with what's about to happen with the NCAA, with all the – I mean, they're going to lose two recruiting classes. And yet, had they not hired Hugh Freeze, I don't know. I think a good exercise would be to go back and think about like what other coaches would have been realistic hires at that time. And who else they may have made a play for and how that might have turned out, because it's hard to win in the SEC West. And I think the most likely scenario is that whoever they would have hired instead of Hugh Freeze would have kept Ole Miss near the bottom half of the SEC West. So I go back and forth. I've walked into this conversation ready to say that I would have gone, like, I wish the Hugh Freeze era hadn't happened if I'm an Ole Miss fan. And I think I'm going to stick with that. Because, look, now Ole Miss as a program has this, like, cheaters label.
Oh, hell yeah, it does.
There's the idea that you said, like, oh, now they got the taste the sweet nectar of success. It can happen. Well, now there's this, like, doubt that, okay, can it happen if we're not cheating? And now there's this moral shadow on the program as well. I just think there's a lot of negative connotation with Ole Miss football all of a sudden. I think you would rather go and try to win it with whoever the other guy would have been that would have been the hot name and hope that you were slightly better off. I don't think there's any chance they would have been what Hugh Freeze built. But I think you come out clean and maybe you're searching for another coach now after too many 6-6 seasons. But it's I think Ole Miss is going to take a while to get back to anywhere close to the level they were at. So I'm going to go with the other side of that. But man, it's I'll grant you it. It's been a fun ride.
I mean, all right. So like a little case study that hits pretty close to home. I remember Carolina fans getting super hyped when Marvin Austin pulled a Carolina hat out over Florida State from like a steel briefcase. And Marvin Austin, because he was tweeting Rick Ross lyrics when he was out at the club, started a whole bunch of NCAA issues. But if you don't get the Marvin Austins and the Bruce Carters and, like, you know, if you don't get these top-notch players and if you don't start making some noise nationally, then the fans don't invest in buying, you know, new facilities and the Blue Zone, and then all of a sudden, like, it is a machine that is ready to get rolling. You're in the Georgia Dome playing against LSU, playing them down to the wire. Like, I think I kind of think that if you can tell your fans, and that's really what I think a lot of this is for me. If you can tell your fans, your boosters, and the people that are going to ultimately power your program, other the outside of the players on the field, the ones that are going to be able to like keep things humming financially and otherwise, if you can at least let them taste it, I think it's worth it.
Okay. As we've been talking, I just pulled up like an old coaching search list of like names that Ole Miss should consider to replace Houston Nutt. Okay. Let's run through this list. Brent Venables.
Ooh, that when he was at Oklahoma.
He was OU at the time. Now I don't, you know, he may have evolved as a coach since then, but obviously right now I think Brent Venables would be universally praised as a hire anywhere. So whether that was a little bit young for him at the time, I don't know, but that's certainly an intriguing name. Jim McElwain, he was at the time the Alabama OC. I think he has proven to be a solid coach, if not spectacular. Kirby Smart, Alabama DC, I think still unknown.
TBD.
John Shoup, North Carolina offensive coordinator, quarterback's coach. Probably not a name that might have found swimming success in Ole Miss. Gus Malzahn, he was at the time the Auburn OC. I think he probably would have been a pretty good hire.
Yeah,
I think
I agree.
He probably would have had success. I think Justin Fuente is on this list, TCU OC. In my opinion, he's proven to be a great coach. And it was a great hire at Memphis and has been a great hire at Virginia Tech. Todd Monken at the time, the Oklahoma State OC, quarterback's coach. Mike London. Probably not.
Who's at Howard now, right?
He's at Howard now. Yeah. He is now the coach of Howard.
He's so always going to be in that Richmond to UVA. Then wasn't he an assistant at Maryland?
Yes, he was one of like the three head coaches on Maryland's staff.
Yeah, he's going to be in the Mid-Atlantic forever.
I agree. And then the last name on this list, which is just like a random list I pulled up, was Jeff Castile. It's funny, Hugh Freeze isn't even on it. But I'm sure this is like an early list. So I don't know. I guess as I look at that list, I think of the Brent Venables and Justin Fuente and Gus Malzahn. And I think that there was opportunity to make another quality hire that perhaps could have given Ole Miss a better footing in the long term.
As opposed to just being buried for like the next 5 years.
Right. As opposed to a couple good sweeps up near the sun for Icarus and then just like crashing into the ocean.
Ah, that's a great little illusion right there. He is Barton Simmons. Follow him for all things Greek mythology and college football at Barton Simmons on Twitter. I am Chip_Patterson. Great question of the day. A lot of fun conversation. That is why it's the award-winning closing segment. Barton, thank you very much.
See you.